here's a topic that I never thought that I'd want to talk about on our podcast, and that is this Nissan-Honda merger. I really thought we were going to be done with this conversation by now, because as big of news as it is, I don't think that the Nissan, kind of struggling to keep up is really a new news story. I think the idea that Honda would come in and have the cash flow to be able to, kind of bankroll the whole thing and keep it going, I think makes a lot of sense, because there's really not too many other Japanese car makers that have that type of girth as far as cash flow and stuff like that.
I guess Toyota would be the only other one, being right. That they're massive.
Right, but I don't know that there's incentive for Toyota to be able to buy a Nissan. Because if you really think about it, Honda's behind the eight ball, I think, in the EV sense, right?
Correct. Yeah, they don't really have anything big with their hybrid technology. Hasn't really innovated in a long time. They're only working with GM on the Prologue and the ZDX.
And so I think ultimately, Nissan has a little bit more of an edge in that side. So I think that they'll have some combined resources. But let's not get fooled here. One of the big things, and I think this is why it doesn't come as a shock, while some people are rolling around as a shock, is that think about if you're the Japanese, okay? We watched America go through a really tough time during that, 2007, 2008, 2009, too big to fail era, right?
Yep.
And it was really important that the government kept American car companies running.
Yeah.
Right? It's no different from the Japanese, right? They don't want Nissan and Honda, look, Toyota, Honda, and Nissan are the
pedigree. They're the pedigree names.
That's what they have.
So, yeah,
right there. So as a Japanese government, there's no doubt that there must have been some sort of conversation. Again, I'm super speculating, right? There's no doubt that there must have been some sort of conversation that would have led in with something like, hey, we can't let this thing go away. We can't let a Chinese automaker come in. And the reason I say that, before anybody jumps down my throat about the Chinese automaker thing, is that Chinese automakers are the ones that seem to have the cash flow that leap in to buy these companies up. We saw it with Volvo. We've seen it with plenty of other countless companies where a void comes in and the Chinese company can come in and put their cash flow in.
I mean, International Harvester, they're now a Chinese company.
Yeah.
The Polestar, as you were saying with Volvo. It's just kind of interesting to see, because you have such these powerhouses that are taking over in China, like BYD and those companies, that they're their lion's share of their market. And where Nissan used to sell product in that market space, it's getting smaller and smaller. And where Honda sold, that marketplace is getting smaller. So it makes sense to kind of join up and use those resources combined to have a bigger footprint in the market.
Well, I think even more than the footprint, it's the save our ship.
Oh, yeah.
It's the hey, we want to make sure that this stays as a Japanese-owned company. And I think the easiest way to do that is for, a position like Honda to, obviously share it in the joint resources of Nissan, but also to make sure these companies as a whole don't go away and they don't divest, from Japanese ownership.
Or even there's also Indian companies that have bought out a couple of them, correct?
A couple of the other ones.
So that would even be an interesting thing to see, because I mean, India is really moving to try to dominate against China's market. Maybe even see an Indian company try to come in and buy one of these Japanese automakers might have also been a fear.
Maybe, but I think now let's talk about from an enthusiast standpoint. Yeah. I think from an enthusiast standpoint, the truth of the matter is we just want to, we want the legacy. The reason you buy a Civic Type R, maybe, again, I'm going to throw something out there, like I said, I'm sure we'll get burned up but in the comments here, but the reason that somebody would lean towards buying a Civic Type R, maybe comparatively to an Elantra N, right? Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on South Koreans or the technology. I think the Elantra N is a good car.
Yep.
And I think on paper, it would be very tough for you maybe to pick which one you would want to own. But in reality, an enthusiast tends to prefer to go to the Type R.
Because of the heritage and the pedigree.
And the legacy. Absolutely, right?
Yep.
So there's a level of being able to preserve that legacy, that pedigree, that heritage, right? And Nissan has it too. With Nismo. You know, Honda, you have HPD and you have, your Type Rs and a lot of your legacy in the sport compact world specifically there. And on Nissan's end, you have, you know, what, 60 years of GTRs and yeah. Nismo. And
I would say Nismo is even more ubiquitous in a lot of ways because there was more street models of Nismo products in the yep. U.S. than there were Type R products. I mean, right. when it really comes down to it, that red Type R badge, yeah, it's kind of like the GTR badge for the Nissan guys sure. where it was reserved for the Halo car in yeah. that aspect. So almost arguably the Nismo branding would almost be more recognizable in the U.S. market.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, when we think about, you know, Nismo parts, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, especially for a long time that would look for HPD parts for their Hondas and you'd see the HPD stickers on mm-hmm. top of things. Right. And then the same thing with Nismo. I mean, you could have an S chassis and still at the point, you know, where they were available, and they might still be available, get a Nismo exhaust, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the same thing for some of the Zs and different things like yeah. that. So, so the Nismo tuning aspect, and, you know, I mean, and I know, like, for me, a big bucket list thing being somebody that really has gotten into appreciate Nissans more and more and more as I've, you know, kind of started to own more of the cars is the ability to one day go to that Amori factory and be able to really go see, you know, in person and, you know, probably buy some overpriced crap. But it's not crap, overpriced stuff, objects, items, performance-tuned vessels.
Toys,
right. But I guess, you know, there's a legacy and a heritage. And, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, I've talked about how much I want an R33 GTR. And, you know, so much of owning one of those GTRs to me is not just about the fact that the performance. I think there's a lot of cars you can buy and develop the same type of performance, if not more.
Well, currently, obviously, modern cars will 100%. Outperform a car from the 90s. I mean, yep. it's just simple technology gap. But right. the heritage, you know, the legacy of it, the feeling of being in yep. that car, that period, the smell, the feel,
yeah,
you can't exchange it.
And don't get me wrong. There's something about Japanese sports cars that were in that vintage, you know, in the R33, the 90s, you know, and early 2000s, you know, in early 90s, in that period where you have an analog feel that's still really raw, but they started to introduce some digital creature comfort. So it kind of is like that really good balance.
Yep.
I think that's why I'm so drawn to my 350Z. I think it's like the last of that where you can kind of get a analog feel.
See, I still think that the Nismo 370, like the last facelift, is the pinnacle. I mean, out of all the ones I've driven, out of all the ones I worked on, that car just feels the most put together, the most.
I get that. But like, it's also, I also think that, like, well, I guess I was trying to take it from a standpoint of like what is still has a really good analog feel, like enough mechanical.
I get that. I know what you're saying. Yeah. The DE generation still feels very much that punchy little
raw mechanical. Yeah, little, still connected. It's still yeah. like I don't feel like the electro. And I feel like the 370 had a little bit more of that.
Well, even the HR
just a little bit.
The HR 350Z right. has that little bit more refined. I know what you're saying. You can absolutely. Feel that little bit more of that. The Euro polish, more of that little bit of
yeah, I mean, like the HR motor was just, I mean, obviously it was a little bit better, but I also think, you know, like now you're going to twin throttle bodies. You know, you had it. I think the variable timing control was better, right?
It was just regular VTC. Vivo only came in once we hit the 3.7 liter. Oh, okay. But right. you still had dual phaser array on the front.
Wait a minute, the HR was a 3.7 liter, wasn't it?
No. It was a 3.5 liter.
Oh,
it just,
you're right.
It was just the HR heads on right. a 3.5 liter. Then eventually they punched it out and then higher compression and then Vival heads. And that's how you got
and
the
370. And that's how we got 370. Yep. Right. Yeah. So I don't know. I really, that's what I think I still like about the 350. I feel like it's right on that edge before it really kicked over the edge. Maybe a little bit more than I want in comparison to like a, you know, R33. But the thing is, it's the legacy. I feel when you get one of those cars, you get an R33 GTR, I feel that you're almost preserving history. Like, in a weird way, for me, as a really, you know, like super obsessive car enthusiast, I feel like it's almost part of my job now to find these cars. Not so I can just say I own them and like a dog pee on everything to mark my territory, but in a way of when, if I can get my hands on one and bring it back to its former glory, I feel like I'm preserving something that I feel like is going away.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like with the advent of the EV revolution that we're having, or or the future of technology and the hybrids or whatever we're going to in the future, I feel like cars are becoming more disposable, or more of that tech item.
Yeah,
where these cars are more of that mechanical piece of history that if we preserve it and we can continue to enjoy it for decades to come,
right?
That's something that is unique to the almost 2016, 2017 cars. You start to see that end. Mm. You start to see this changeover, especially after 2020, where the more modern cars, I feel like they've become a tech item. They've become a iPad or something like that, where we're disposing of them and moving on to the next thing, and they're not that heritage car.
Which kind of brings us back to, you know, here are some of the things I think enthusiasts want to see from this merger, right? Yeah. We would love to see some joint use of some really cool technology, right? Yeah. Now, look, am I saying it's not possible that you may get a 400, I don't want to call it 400Z, I hate when people do that, but like when you get a brand new Z in, let's say, 4 or 5 years from now, and there's a base option. I mean, I know that we've talked about this before, about the cars really having something, but there's a base option, 2 liter or 2.5 liter, you know, motor that's also shared with a Honda Civic Type R, or one of the,
or we could do a Honda Roadster, like the S600, like little Roadster, an S2000 little Roadster, and then you could kind of have that shared technology.
Maybe, but I really could see that at some point, like, you know, your Nissan could come with VTEC, right?
I mean, that would be.
This is possible and plausible. So I think with a lot of these things, I think what ends up happening is, do I think that there's room for joint technology share? Absolutely. Do I think we're going to get it? Maybe not. But, you know, I think from an enthusiast standpoint, we hope that they're going to roll some of the best and coolest things from each company into each other, and we're going to just get better performance enthusiast cars. These companies probably arguably are the two most, you know, of the import companies that have done the most still in performance. Like, it's,
they've 100% kept it performed, right? I mean, they're still working. I mean,
Hyundai, don't get me wrong, Hyundai's still doing their thing, but it's different.
Yeah, but I feel like they're the most targeted when it comes to understanding that a large segment of their brand is still loyal because of their heritage, because of the name, because it's Nissan.
Right. Like,
all of us, you know, even if you're not a huge, say, Honda guy.
Yep.
We all can look at an EK9 Type R and go, wow, that was a pristine, you know, whatever. You know, we can look at it and say it's a great car, you know, look at the benchmarks on it or whatever, and look at those cars as history and as a sought-after car.
Yeah.
And then if you continue to see that with these brands where Honda's like, okay, we're going to continue to make the Civic and we're going to continue to do a Type R. And then you have Nissan that comes in and says, hey, we're going to finally come back with a Sentra that's more performance oriented. And you have that shared technology where you have the front wheel drive, you know, layout with the K series or whatever we want to call it. It could be a time for us to still get those little performance cars that we wanted.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong. I think the days of the K, unfortunately, for Honda are going to come to an end. They have been for a while, you know, as they replace them with some of these other engines. But the truth is, like, you know, we may start to see some really interesting things. Enthusiasts want to have maybe some really good all-wheel drive system in a Civic Type R. Could you imagine having a GTR all-wheel drive system in a Civic Type R?
A DCT in the back of a Civic Type R, that'd be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Right? So, like, there's definitely things that, as an enthusiast, you want. You want the best of both worlds to collide and you come up with this thing. Now, on the other side of that, these people generally, you know, if you're a Nissan enthusiast or a Nismo enthusiast, you're not necessarily, you know, super into, you know, the Honda HPD Type R type stuff. Doesn't mean you don't appreciate it, but like, you might be one or the other. There might be a divide there. So maybe you're like, hey, I don't want the cross pollination here, right?
But I think that might also have to do with like the front wheel drive mindset versus, you know, Nissan designed a lot more vehicles to be rear wheel drive and to be all wheel drive. Even the front wheel drive ones had all-wheel drive variants.
Yeah.
So they've always been very focused on that mentality, where Honda has spent a large majority of their time in the front-wheel drive market. Don't get me wrong, the S2000 is one of my favorite cars ever made, but they're known for making those front-wheel drive platforms.
Right.
So with the technology share, we might actually see that crossover where you're starting to get the technology of a worthwhile all-wheel drive Accord, or where, you know, it serves its purpose, you know, not only just from the performance standpoint, but as a consumer in general, if you're selling a really good, high quality all-wheel drive platform, that might do more for the company than anything.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I think that, you know, as far as, you know, some of the GTR, you know, I don't want to give the name, I don't want to start with the name of what we call them, just because, like, I don't want everybody to think we're whatever, but, you know, the all-wheel drive system in the GTR, I would argue, is probably one of the best in some of the more modern-day sports cars. I mean, it's a pretty
aggressive. I mean, all the Tesla systems are. I mean, that's the thing. Even the ones that are in the Q50, Q60, G37, it works well. I mean, it will never leave you stranded. You're going to get into snow. You hit the snow mode. You throttle out, and the car moves.
Right.
You know, I've gotten out of every stuck situation I've been in with the car.
Yeah, and they're good rear-wheel drive bias cars.
Yeah.
So you could still have a lot of fun with them.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I mean, could we see something like that in a Civic Type R? Like, maybe, you know, come 2028, 2029?
Core Type R would be pretty cool, because we never got that. Yeah.
When I look at the new body of the new Accord, though, I don't feel like I need that right now. maybe if a facelift came, it will sell better, though.
That's where I'm going. Like, this might actually be more beneficial for them.
Yeah, but we can keep it for some legacy cars. Yeah, I can see it, you know, maybe in an Integra, in the Integra Type S or something like that. You know what I mean?
That would be cool, too.
But look, here's the reality. The reality is that with everybody talking, let's talk about what we're actually going to get.
Yeah.
Right? Most likely, what we are actually going to get is two companies that kind of keep their legacy completely independent, with the exception of shared global platforms that are going to be for mainstream delivered cars. Yep. And we're also going to see a joint technological kind of force here, where they're going to be able to each benefit of their distribution channels and also the ability to manufacture some pretty decent EVs and kind of bring Honda back up on the you know, back up to speed from, you know, how far behind I think they really were.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see more of a joint effort of making sure that the companies coexist in a financial sense and in a P&L and very financial sense. I think that from a vehicle sense, what you're going to get are going to be, you know, a lot of, you know, EVs, mainstream platforms, things that they could turn into global cars, shared economy of, you know, scale type of things. And I think them both being from Japan will help that. But because I think the mindset of a lot of the Japanese companies in a headquarter way is different from a lot of other mindsets that you may find for some of the other companies. Tough maybe recently, just because, you know, there's been a little weird history with CEOs and things like that. But, you know, I think that at the end of the day, you know, even though he's not like a huge part of it, Mr. Toyota himself was the one that was advocating for don't go EV. We can't go EV.
It won't work.
We need to be able to do, you know, the plug-in hybrid thing.
The plug-in hybrids was big with them, and so was the hydrogen fuel cell. If you remember, Toyota dumped massive amounts of R&D into the hydrogen fuel cell, and they've been doing it for a long time. So I feel like Toyota has been anti just, you know, EV in a lot of senses when it comes to that. I know that their hybrid has always been kind of their, especially, it's ironic considering that they were like one of the first ones to market with the Prius being so popular.
Well, but it's a hybrid.
It's a hybrid.
And but I believe that they always thought that was a good step. I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, commonality of, you know, thought process, right? As far for the from the Japanese, and I hope that stays true. And I know that, like, you know, even Mitsubishi has kind of stuck their hand in there to try to get into that global platform, and try to help out in different ways.
I know that they're big into battery technology. Mitsubishi is. They've been doing a lot with batteries.
Yeah.
I know that they just announced like a longer range plug-in hybrid that they're working on, things like that.
So I just hope they don't let them touch too much of the cars, because as a guy that was a big DSM and Evo person, I love the cars, but I can't really say they did a great job with the quality of the cars.
No, I as an Evo owner also for a very short time, definitely nothing but problems.
Yeah, it was a difficult point in Mitsubishi's lifestyle there. But I mean, like, don't get me wrong, I still, as much as, you know, they would be a little bit unreliable, I do think that once you got used to working on them and you knew some of the things that go around them, you can make them more reliable than they were. So yeah, I don't want to throw too much shade, but, you know, it's interesting to see kind of watch the Japanese brethren kind of step up and take care of their own, as they should.
Yeah.
I mean, they really should. I mean, that's really the deal.
I mean, it's their marketplace. You know, yeah. At the end of the day, this is their market. They created the entire market there in Japan. And I mean, at the end of the day, that would be like us not rallying behind Ford and Chevy and Dodge.
Which we have a history of doing anyway.
We've done it in the past. So,
although Stellantis, you know, you never know right now.
Stellantis. That's a whole other podcast, though.
Yeah, for the most part. Well, I think we had pushed this thing down the road so much just because of the fact that I kept saying, like, this is not going to be a talking point for that long. Yeah. But every time we kind of roll into another week, it seems like it comes up again and again and again. And look, I just don't want, like, I really don't believe that you're going to see anything crazy come out of this relationship. I do think both companies will find a means to, you know, kind of share their scalability and their size of scope. I think you have, you know, one that has a much better distribution network, and then you have another one that has, you know, some technology that really could be utilized and shared to bring other people up to speed. So I think there's that. I think you're still going to see the majority of this stuff be more global cars, not their high end or their specialized type of performance vehicles. I think they're going to keep that separate.
Yeah.
I think the pride there will keep them to do that, you know, will allow them to do that. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see the way these companies come together and, you know, kind of evolve the face of a lot of these cars. And, you know, does it last? Is it one of those things that, you know, they really want to do, or are they just doing it? Yep. Just in solidarity, you know?
5 years is really going to be interesting. And that's really what it's going to be. It's looking back on this in 5 years and saying, this is what we thought was going to happen, and this is what actually transpired, is going to be a really interesting watch.
Maybe. But I think the real big takeaway here is, you know, find all your, you know, 90s and, you know, early 2000s Japanese sports cars, you know, the really good ones. And treasure them and then sell them to me. So I think if we can do that, then everything will be just fine.
You just go put them all in a barn somewhere, and then they'll just be fine.
If you wouldn't mind, if you have everything cool, you know, it's okay to reach out to me and tell me that you have these cool things, sell them to me at a very fair price so that I can own them and save them for all of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sounds good.
That's it. What do you guys think about what's going on with this whole Nissan Honda merger? How do you think that's going to change the landscape of maybe some of the more performance tuned vehicles that they continuously provide us? Are we going to see some new things that we've never seen? I don't want to say never, that we haven't seen in a long time from Honda, right? Like the rear-wheel drive S2000 type platforms. Are we going to see a modernized version of that, knowing that they can share some of the scope on the Z platform, right? Are we going to see something introduced there on the Honda side from there? Or are we going to see some sort of all-wheel drive introduction to the Civic Type R, like so many people have asked
for decades,
or hoped that was going to happen, especially every time, like when the FL5 came out, that's what everybody was hoping would happen, right? And when I say everyone, I mean a lot of people. I know there's a lot of people that are going to be purists in the sense of saying it was always a front-wheel drive system. I get it.
But at what point? The car is getting heavier. The car is getting bigger. At what point? And you're running out of the ability for front-wheel drive to do all the work. So even if you did a front...
That's, don't get me wrong.
At the end of the day, I feel like you're just running out. I mean, yes, with the right driver, but most people that are buying that car aren't going to go to the track and learn how to drive at that level
where they get
the potential out of the car. You can cheat and get a little bit more potential out of it using the all-wheel drive.
Look, I think there's definitely, we can argue these two things to the moon comes home. But let us know what you think down below in the comments. Let us know how you feel this merger is going to shake out. Do you think we're going to see something cool, or do you think it's just going to be a global standpoint, rally together, kind of put these cars in the right place and kind of keep it from an economical standpoint a good venture, right?
Yep.
So that's it. Take care of yourself. We'll catch you on the next one.
See you guys.
you.